America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Monday. What is the date today here? It's the 12th, I think. Yeah, the 12th of March. There we go. And Rudy Giuliani, back in 1989, pretty unambiguous, and it looks like there's a very, very good chance, particularly after broadcasting from the CPAC conference and talking with a lot of Republicans and a lot of conservatives 2 weekends ago or 2 weeks ago, I got this very, very strong sense. There's a very good chance that Rudy Giuliani is going to be the Republican nominee. Here is Rudy Giuliani in 1989.
There must be public funding for abortions for poor women. We cannot deny any woman the right to make her own decision about abortion because she lacks resources. I have also stated that I disagree with President Bush's veto last week of public funding for abortion.
Now, that Rudy Giuliani in 1989, some time ago, he's taking a somewhat different position right now. Chris Slattery is with us. He's the founder and president of New York City's oldest and largest network of crisis pregnancy centers. His website, expectantmothercare.org, and crisis pregnancy centers. Craig, would it be inaccurate to say that these are centers that very often are mistaken as family planning or abortion centers?
They're very frequently visited by women who are considering an abortion, and that's why we set them up.
Yeah. I want to get into that with you, and thanks for coming on the program. My apologies for having to have delayed it from last week when you were originally scheduled.
No problem.
What are your thoughts on Rudy Giuliani as,
well, first of all, he was
the mayor of the city in which you've been doing this?
I have to make it clear that my comments on any political candidates are completely my own and have
right.
nothing to do with my organization. I think he is not a friend of the pro-life cause, is no doubt about it. And it would be deeply disturbing.
Now, that was true of George W. Bush at one time. You know, George W. Bush in 1977, when he was running for the U.S. House of Representatives, supported abortion on demand. His father supported abortion on demand. Isn't it possible for a Republican to change his tune?
But Rudy Giuliani hasn't changed his tune.
He hasn't.
Mitt Romney, who has made, a sincere conversion to the pro-life cause, Rudy is just holding firm. He's not making a conversion, and he's standing up for partial birth abortion, the most heinous act of against children that
happens in the United States
ten
or 15 times a year.
Pardon?
That happens in the United States what 10 or 15 times a year?
Ha ha ha. Well, then I guess you should have it on the reporters from the Bergen Record in New Jersey who claim that one partial birth abortion facility that's just been shut down by the state for nearly killing a woman in Englewood did 1,500 of these procedures per year. So you're claiming 5 or 10. You need to check your facts, Tom.
I have a feeling we have a variation in definitions. First of all, there is no such thing as a partial birth abortion. If you look in any medical textbook, you will not find it. This is another one of these made-up phrases that you guys throw out there to try to get people hysterical.
We'll see the U.S. Supreme Court decide on this, since they heard oral arguments by the U.S. government upholding the ban on this.
On late-term abortions.
Yeah,
late-term abortions.
We can call it partial birth abortion. You can call it late-term. It's killing a baby either way, and all of the procedures of abortion from the earliest stages to the last moment before birth are disgraceful and disgusting and inhuman, but
and you don't think that being forced, you guys in the forced pregnancy movement don't feel that a woman being forced to carry a child to full term carries risks that are at least equal to or greater than a very early first trimester abortion?
It's a real myth, Tom, that abortion is riskier than childbirth. And it's also a myth.
I agree.
It's a myth that.
I think what you meant to say is that it's a myth that childbirth is riskier than abortion. But in fact, I'm talking about first trimester abortions, not all abortions, and there's you know, no shortage. I mean, there's a broad, even on your side, I think that there's a general consensus and agreement that in an early term abortion, medically, now you guys would argue psychologically there's all kinds of problems associated with it, and there's conflicting evidence on that, but that medically, an early, you know, when we're talking about a piece of tissue that's smaller than a period at the end of a sentence, that or smaller than a grain of wheat, that or smaller than a pea, that abortion is safer than carrying a child to term.
No, I mean, we just a major study that was released in Finland, because we don't have adequate research in the United States, but a 13-year major study of the population of women who'd had abortions there concluded that the death rate of abortion was three times higher than from childbirth. And we need these kind of studies to prove that abortion is riskier than childbirth. And,
well,
you know, what you talked
I'd
about,
like to look at the details of that.
Women being forced to carry their children to term, what about the homeless women who are denied shelter until they get an unwanted abortion, or teens who are ridiculed by school counselors and bussed into abortion clinics, and girlfriends who are injected by abortifacients outside parking garages, like happened in the Bronx here?
What about women in Portugal who go to prison for 3 years if it's found out that they have an abortion? Is that what you
want? No pro-life leader in this country is calling for jail terms or sentences for women who get abortions. Only for
actually, I interviewed
myth you guys have been promoting for
well,
years.
Well, it's not a myth. I was at the Republican National Convention broadcasting this show live from the RNC a couple of years ago in 2004. And one of these guys sat down, and on the air I said, okay, is abortion murder? And he said, yes. And I said, so if somebody hires a murderer, that makes them complicit in the crime? And he says, yes. And I said, do you think women should be put to death if they have abortions by lethal injection, by hanging, or by electrocution? And he said, I think it's up to the state.
Show me a single pro-life bill proposed in the last 4 years.
Well, obviously,
years.
Nobody is taking the final position yet right now. Because this is
a single day in jail for women to get an abortion. Our aim is to protect women from the abortionists to exploit and victimize them.
And yet this is all incrementalism. We're talking with Chris Slattery, by the way. He's the head of ExpectantMotherCare.org, the nation's largest network of crisis pregnancy centers. Chris, the major criticism against the work that you guys do is that you set these things up. People think they're walking into abortion clinics. There's this one woman who writes her story about she went in with her daughter and thinking that it was an abortion clinic. And the staff volunteer comes out with the pregnancy test results. This is a girl who's just a few weeks pregnant. She literally ran over to us and said, congratulations, here's a gift for our new baby. Then they asked us what we wanted to do. My daughter and I said we decided the best thing for her was to have an abortion, how much would it cost? And the two ladies said, please wait a minute, left, came back with a doll and scissors and said, this is what your baby looks now, and we're going to start cutting you up because that's what will happen if you get an abortion. So start cutting. I grabbed her and threw out the doll at the ladies and got out of there fast. I later found out it wasn't a real clinic. Why do you have to engage?
That just sounds like a fairy tale. I can't believe that would happen in any crisis pregnancy center in America. I think you're just making it up. Or the people.
Then why has Representative Maloney of New York introduced legislation? Why
has? That's just absurd. Look, we've had
in that case, Chris,
chosen life in our centers, and none of them have been given any kind of tactic like that. It's just absurd.
Okay.
Well,
in that case,
why don't you concern yourself with the tactics that kill and maim thousands of women in this country every year in abortion?
Chris, I will acknowledge that you are opposed to abortion and that you think it's killing and maiming. I'm not going to argue that with you. I there's a difference of opinion here, but I'm concerned about these you know, what some would describe as deceptive techniques. Congressman Maloney from New York has introduced a bill called the Stop Deceptive Advertising in Women's Services Act. It's House Resolution 5052. That will protect women from deceptive advertising in what you call crisis pregnancy centers. Do you support that legislation?
Absolutely not. It's just an aim to silence crisis centers, and I had to silence an abortion clinic deceptively advertising under abortion alternatives right in Carolyn Maloney's backyard, where the Attorney General Elliot Spitzer at the time could care less about the...
What's wrong with outlawing both?
What?
What's wrong with outlawing both? What's wrong with saying that an abortion clinic cannot characterize itself as an abortion alternative?
It's already outlawed in the state, and we filed claims in state court. We don't need federal legislation.
So you want them outlawed, but you don't want you outlawed.
Pregnancy centers, when we don't regulate abortion clinics satisfactorily in the states nor on a federal level at all.
To what extent are your crisis pregnancy centers getting federal funding, Chris?
Absolutely none. Most of them get nothing, not a dollar. Some states give money. And then there's the separate abstinence education programs, which have been getting some funding, which are run in schools. Most of us beg, borrow, and for our mothers to get the support they need. People go to expectantmothercare.org to help us. God bless you.
Good to get that on the record. Chris Slattery, expectantmothercare.org, the website.
God bless.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
She said, don't condescend me, cause I know the Bible too. And I bet I'll get to heaven just as quick as you. I asked for my ticket so I could be on the way. And as I walked out the door, I heard the lady say, thou shalt not kill helpless children in some crazy war somewhere. Thou shalt not kill by injection, gas chamber or the chair. Thou shalt not kill with poison water or polluted air. Thou shalt not kill.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. We can use, I think, as a stepping off point, our conversation with Chris Slattery to get into some of a whole variety of really what I would call truly pro-life issues. And by the way, just a heads up, Halliburton says they're going to shift their headquarters to Dubai. We will be talking about that a little later on in the program. Our second hour is entirely open. In our third hour, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bogar is going to be with us. He's a military defense counsel for a Guantanamo detainee, and we're going to get into that topic somewhat in the third hour of the program. But in a little bit, we'll get into what's up with Halliburton, and is this guy, you know, one step ahead of Congress? Should somebody be talking about pulling passports? But sticking with life for just a minute, since Judy Giuliani, this is all in the news now, this audio clip of Rudy Giuliani saying that he supports a woman's right not only to have an abortion, but to have a federally funded abortion, has hit the internet and has got all the right-wingers all in a lather. At the same time, inmates in South Carolina, this is the Associated Press, would soon find that a kidney is worth 180 days. Lawmakers are considering legislation that would allow prisoners to donate organs or bone marrow in exchange for time off their sentences. Federal law, however, makes it illegal to give organs for what it calls valuable consideration. Under the proposals, money for medical procedures and any prison guard overtime would be paid by the organ recipient. So, wealthy people will be able to go to prisons in the United States and say that they are, you know, so a wealthy person who needs a liver or needs a kidney or needs a bone marrow transplant, go to a prison in the United States, and they'll find some prisoner who has a good tissue match and say, hey, you want to get a little time off your sentence? This guy will pay for it. Let's do it. Is that right? Is that ethical? I think it's horrible. I am totally opposed to this process and to this practice. If people are in prison, they should be in prison because they need to be segregated from society. And if they don't need to be segregated from society, they should be in some sort of a program that provides rehabilitation and gives them an opportunity to become productive members of society. I think we have our priorities all wrong with regard to prisons from the get-go as a starting point. We have more people in prison, both in absolute number and as a percentage, than any other country in the world. That should tell us that something's wrong. Private prisons are a huge industry. Prison is a growth industry. The whole war on drugs is a growth industry. And there's literally a multi-billion-dollar, multi-hundred-billion-dollar, maybe a $1 trillion, who knows, industry around the business of incarcerating people in the United States. And now they want to merge that with the for-profit healthcare industry. And basically the only difference I can tell between this and what goes on in China right now, because right now in China, if you're a multimillionaire, an American multimillionaire, and you need a kidney, you can go to China, and they will look through the prison and find somebody whose tissue matches yours and execute that person and give you their kidney. The Chinese just, hey, you know, knock the guy off and pull a kidney out. Or maybe they pull a kidney out first and then let him die on the table. I don't know how they do it, but, you know, they execute people and sell their organs. Well, here we would be selling people's organs and giving them a little time off. Well, hey, wait a minute. If somebody really and truly should be in jail, they're going to, and because they're going to be dangerous running out around in the general population, they're going to be running around dangerous in the general population, even if they're missing one kidney or some bone marrow. I mean, this completely mixes up these two issues. It just makes no sense at all. At the same time, there's this new federal law intended to keep illegal immigrants in the United States from receiving Medicaid. Robert Parr writing about this in the New York Times today. Again, let's talk about life, right? Let's talk about life for the living. Tens of thousands of people, apparently, are not able to get Medicare because they can't meet the requirements of this federal law, which is that they produce the original documentation certifying that they were born in the United States. The hospital that they were born in, you know, was torn down, shut down, sold off to Bill Frist's family back 20, 30 years ago. It's no longer even possible. This is under the, by the way, the Deficit Reduction Act of 2006. Oh, this is incredible. Kevin Concannon, the director of human services in Iowa, says the largest adverse effect of this policy has been on people who are American citizens. In Florida, 63,000 people were declined. Excuse me, the number of children on Medicaid declined by 63,000. Yeah, 63,000 additional children were declined. And he says nearly all of these people are American citizens. So, and finally, the feds are going to cut aid. Federal officials secretly scheme to limit payouts for sick and dying nuclear weapon workers, including thousands from the Rocky Flats plants outside Denver, newly released documents show. The White House, paying for living people? What? Not going to happen. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
And come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come here to justify. One man to overthrow.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat up at the top of the page, and it'll drop you in there. It's free and all that kind of stuff. It's cool. And also the blog is over at AirAmericaRadio.com or AirAmerica.com as well. 1-866-303-2270. And Lathan in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Lathan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to comment on the gentleman that you just had on.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that all of these wonderful pro-life people tend to never take into account is the economics behind having a child in America.
Right.
Between rising health care costs, lowering wages, higher cost of living, it gets extremely expensive to have a child.
Yeah, I've seen numbers that suggest it's in the neighborhood of anywhere from $150,000 to $500,000 to have it to raise a child. I've raised three of them. It can be expensive.
Well, even then, they also don't take it. I mean, let's see. They cut money to any public program that could help a person work before and after having a child. They also cut money in education.
Yeah.
So what's a person going to do? I mean, they're kind of they're going to catch it from both ends. But it's like, can I have the kid? But they can't afford the kid once they have it.
Yep. Good point. Good point. Well made. Thank you, Lathan. I appreciate it. Jason in Pinckney, Michigan. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Tom. How's it going? You have the best show on the radio.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the harvesting of organs over in China. I was reading a
and now in soon to be in South Carolina, I guess it is.
Yeah, isn't that great? They actually do it while the people are alive, so they get the freshest organ possible.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes, everything, you name it. I can't even imagine. like.
Well, I'm sure they use anesthesia. It would be necessary just to get them without injuring them. But nonetheless, it's it is gruesome. It's a very gruesome business. And in fact, when Hu Jintao was or whatever his name is, when President Hu was here visiting with George Bush on the grounds of the White House, and that woman stood up and started yelling at him, the Chinese woman, and they dragged her off.
Yep,
she was a
that.
Chinese physician. She was an MD. And what she was protesting was the killing of political prisoners in order to sell their organs as a profit center for the Chinese government. That's specifically what she was protesting. And Bush had her dragged away.
Oh, yeah. That was actually in the paper that I read. And a lot of the people are put in, modern-day concentration camps, and their crime is practicing a religion where it's like meditating.
So Falun Gong is the biggest one, although you can be put in prison for being a Christian in a lot of places.
That's the one, yeah.
If you're not an acceptable one. Yeah, good point, Jason. Thank you very much. Jerry in Long Island, New York. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my call. Yeah, and Giuliani, there's so many things once you talk about Giuliani, but with respect to the abortion issue, there was this article on Saturday, February 10th in the New York Times, Giuliani Shifts Abortion Speech Gently to the Right by Ray Rivera. And basically what the article comes down to is this, that Giuliani intends to overcome right-wing Republican opposition to his words of support for abortion rights. He intends to do that with promises to the right-wing of action to appoint right-wing anti-abortion, what he calls and what they call strict constructionist judges like Scalia and Thomas and Alito as well. And so I think that the right-wing is really not going to be paying as much attention to his words as to his promises of action to appoint these judges that they like that have a good chance of overturning, or at least if they do not overturn Roe v. Wade, they'll greatly limit abortion rights for women.
Interesting.
And that's one of many problems with Giuliani. And the thing I worry about with the so-called mainstream media, the corporate media, is that they seem to be helping Giuliani in so many ways. That first they play along with this new reinvented 911 hero image he's created for himself.
Right, when he was widely hated in New York, as I recall. I mean, that's
exactly
my recollection. He was very unpopular before 9/11.
Exactly, and that's part of the problem, because that's the second thing the corporate media is doing.
You got the firefighters union. Won't even go near him right now.
Yeah, well, corporate media is avoiding talking about all of Giuliani's problems before 9/11 and giving him such a free pass. I mean, everything from his mishandling of a racially charged, seemingly unjustified, fatal police shooting of unarmed African-American men like Amadou Diallo and Patrick Dorisman. And there's even a little-known story about where Giuliani once stayed at a racist hotel chain in Buffalo, New York, and that was printed on February 21st of 2000 in the New York Observer. Giuliani slept here, even though feds say it's a racist hotel chain, and it was being sued by the Clinton Justice Department for discrimination against minorities. Rudolph Giuliani was busy criticizing Hillary Clinton for something. In the meantime, he was staying at this hotel. And he has shown so much racial insensitivity. For a long time, he refused to meet with the first African-American borough president of Manhattan.
Yeah. No, I've got it, Jerry. There's a long list of these, and I think that one of the reasons why the Firefighters Union is so opposed to him, I don't have a specific news release or anything from them, but, I mean, look at what happened after 9/11. All these lies came down from the Bush administration specifically. I mean, we now know the Environmental Protection Agency was instructed to lie about the air quality down there. You had all these firefighters show up inhaling deadly combinations of cement and asbestos and chemicals, a lot of them on disability. Many of them have died now. And another huge cover-up by the administration, including the Giuliani administration. And the firefighters in New York are having no part of it. They're saying, thank you very much, but no thanks. And I think, well said. Donna in Gig Harbor, Washington. Hey, Donna.
Hi, Tom. I'd really like you to rethink your position on this organ marrow donor thing with the prison. Number one, I'm surprised. Maybe I misunderstood you, but I think you misrepresented it when you initially read the article and stated that they'd be out 6 months early, 180 days.
Right.
that doesn't translate to me as a financial recompense, which is what you kind of inferred when you said that some wealthy guy would come in and buy a kidney. Not going to happen.
Well, I'm reading the story here from the Associated Press. It says money for medical procedures and prison guard overtime will be paid by the organ recipient. That's verbatim from the article.
They probably mean the transportation to get the person to the hospital to take care of those expenses. I mean, Tom, if you look at it, you know, I think that you'd be one of the first ones to say that our prisons are filled with people. There are all kinds of statistics that you guys, and I say you because you're, you know, brainy on the statistics, throw around about the percentage of African Americans in prison, and to find a bone marrow donor of mixed racial descent is virtually impossible in this country. Virtually impossible. So you've got a kid that needs a bone marrow transplant.
May I interrupt you, Donna?
Desperately.
May I interrupt you? If your argument is that inmates in prison should be allowed to donate organs just like anybody else can in the general population, I agree with you.
Absolutely.
The question here is, should inmates in prison be rewarded with 180 days, getting out 100 day, you know, a half a year earlier in exchange for giving up an organ? And you know, I just think that that is a moral slippery slope that we in the United States don't want to go down.
It is a moral slippery slope, but I'm not as deeply convicted about that as you are, because I'm a little bit more questioning about why most people are in prison in the first place. And, you know, I think that there's a bigger picture to all of
this. Well, I am too, but what happens if they pass this law in South Carolina and they discover that, well, you know, maybe a tenth of 1% of the prisoners are willing to give up a kidney for 180 days. So the lawmakers go back and they say, well, 180 days doesn't appear to be enough. Why don't we make it 2 years? We'll give them 2 years off for a kidney. And now we're up to 3 or 4%. I mean, you know, it's a market thing, right? Eventually you're going to hit a point where you're going to get a lot of prisoners who are willing to give up organs. And, you know, they give up the cornea from one eye. You can see with one eye. They'll give up, you know.
I think that's really degrading to the humanity that are in our prisons. Do you think that there are people in prison right now that just wouldn't want to help their fellow human being? I mean, I think that's kind of a degrading kind of deal to put these people in a position where you virtually envision them bargaining their time away with their body parts. I don't see that.
I agree it's degrading. And that's why I say, you know, if somebody's in prison and they want, and there was a famous case about 2 years ago of a guy who wanted to give a kidney to his brother. You may recall this. It made national media. And the prison wouldn't let him out for 2 weeks because he had to go into a hospital to do it. And so his brother died and he wasn't able to do it. And he was going to get nothing for it other than saving his brother's life. And I think he should have been able to. I think people in prison should have the ability to donate, you know, organs or bone marrow is an easier one, I think. It's painful, but it doesn't, you know, it's not like losing a kidney where you're at risk, it puts your life at risk. I think they should have the ability to do that, just like you and I have the ability to do that. But to say to them, we as a society are going to decide to take time off your time in prison. I mean, either they're in prison because they need to be in prison, or they shouldn't be in prison.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's my take.
That's a really clean flow or a really clean delineation. I guess I'm a little bit more on the gray side. So thanks for the chat.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a good conversation, Donna. Thank you very much for the call. This is what it comes down to for me is if people are in prison, and if they're in prison, they should be in prison either A, because there is some sort of a rehabilitation program because they are going to go back out into society, or they're going to be there forever. 45 minutes past the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, listening for our local sponsors in particular. That's where the rubber meets the road, our local radio stations. Listen for the local sponsors and support them by buying their products and letting them know that you're listening to the program. And also our national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, sacredgroundscoffee.com, Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, E-C-O Wine, and Purina One Natural Blends, 1-866-380-MEOW. And because this is how you can support Progressive Talk Radio. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Greg in Hood River, Oregon. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just listening to this debate about the organ donations they're wanting to do in the prisons.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the science fiction writers had an article about this like 20 years ago. They called it the organ leggers.
Yeah, and But the state senate in Oregon, the panel in the state senate has actually endorsed this now and sent it on to the full senate.
It's kind of bizarre in that in this article, if someone had a traffic citation, they would be forced to donate an organ. And that's sort of the slippery slope we're headed down with this thing.
Yeah, I have some big concerns about this. Thanks a lot for the call, Greg. Tom in Sleepy Hollow, New York. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today? Oh, Tom's not there. Let's drop that. And Eric in Kansas, driving in Kansas. Hey, Eric, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Tom. I have a friend, a pen pal, that's, inmate in South Carolina. And I think this is just insane. You're going to offer somebody 180 days off in order to pay and then try to recoup money for overtime for the pay to guard. Why don't they start taxing the top 1% again and then start enforcing the drug law? Then maybe some of these impoverished people won't be tempted to, sell drugs. If you stop the flow of drugs into the country, people wouldn't be in a position to try to sell drugs.
I think it even goes beyond that, Eric. I think we as a nation are a nation of entrepreneurs. America's a nation of entrepreneurs, and people like to start businesses. You know, it's kind of the American dream. It's kind of a cool thing. And if you live in a community that is economically disadvantaged, either because of institutional racism or because of the institutional structure of our nation, where, you know, our jobs are increasingly being outsourced, for example, in Flint, Michigan, or even parts of Lansing, Michigan, where I grew up, you know, as auto plants shut down, Detroit, where I lived for a while, auto plants shut down and things, you've got entire neighborhoods that used to be thriving, and now they aren't anymore because the major employers have gone. And so what are people going to do? Well, you can start your own business, but what kind of business can you start if you don't have a whole lot of capital? You become a drug dealer. It's an entrepreneurial venture. And boom, you find yourself in jail, and they're saying, give me a kidney? I mean, come on, give me a break. What we need to do is we need to be going into these communities and saying, we're going to give people economic opportunity. We're going to help them open local businesses. We're going to stop the big predatory multi-state multinational companies from coming in and opening big box stores and wiping out all the local businesses, and let's make our communities again.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So,
having
that's
grown
my
up
risk.
In South Central L.A., I've seen what happened when the GM plants went away. All the big, Goodyear rubber, all that left the neighborhood.
Yeah, let's.
And all that was left in L.A. to do was sell drugs, and the Iran-Contra got that flow of drugs in there and just made L.A. It's just a shame what happened.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how Reagan, with Iran-Contra, was bringing all this cocaine into the United States, dropping the price on cocaine and turning it into a real growth industry for people who didn't have anything else to do because, you know, for the variety of reasons you and I are talking about. And now you got the Bush administration, and Afghanistan last year exported more opium and heroin than any country in the history of planet Earth. And
it's crazy because the Taliban had just about wiped out the poppy fields.
I know, because Bush gave him $40 million to do it in March of 2001. You're absolutely right, and it's just incredible. So, Eric, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Mike, in driving in Wyoming. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I love
good.
It. Last caller, man. He's right on it.
Yeah.
Love your program. Only got one problem is you're not on Sirius long enough every day.
Well, you got to talk to them about that. But anyhow, what's up?
Another thing is, you was talking about the people not being able to get proof that they were born in the U.S. in order to get Medicare, Medicaid, whatever.
Yeah.
Several years ago, my wife and I'm 56, my wife's 55. we had to get proof of our citizenship, our birth certificate, and she's adopted even and knew where she was born, so she wrote to St. Louis, and the county there sent her a copy of her birth certificate. So
right.
I don't see how these people get...
The problem, Mike, is really twofold. Part of the problem is that it's not just a birth certificate. You have to offer two forms of proof of citizenship, and a driver's license doesn't count. So you have to have a passport and a birth certificate, or a birth certificate and an original Social Security card, for example. That, you know, those two things would work. And
well, yeah,
secondly, we're talking, and I agree with you probably, Mike, that you and I, people who you know, fairly well educated, make a decent living and can probably take a day off to do this kind of thing, it's probably not a huge burden for us. But we're talking about Medicaid recipients. We're talking about kids in families where very often you've got one parent, you know, with a whole bunch of kids, or kids who have a quarter of a parent who's hardly even there, or children in poverty, where you've got parents who are working two and three jobs, holding down, just trying to get, where even if they take 3 hours off to go down to the Social Security office and get a copy of their Social Security card, they're going to lose their minimum wage job. I mean, keep in mind, these are kids who are eligible for medical services through the state. So they are, by definition, the children of poverty. And people in poverty find it a whole lot harder to get that kind of documentation than you and I do.
Okay, I understand that. That's the
bottom line. And the interesting thing about the article in the New York Times today is that it's really not stopping illegal immigrants. If they're really determined, they can come up with phony documents. What it's stopping is poor Americans. And all the more the tragedy. You know, the law of unintended consequences. Mike, thanks for calling. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
Well, should we be telling federal prisoners or state prisoners, in the case of South Carolina, hey, that kidney? That's 180 days. You want to give a cornea? We'll give you a year off your sentence. We'll take your left arm for 2 years. Left foot, that might be worth a year and a half. Maybe, you know, the veins from your leg that could be used for a heart bypass, that's worth, you know, I mean, where do you start? I mean, where do you stop? Once this kind of thing begins, where does it stop? And what does it mean? What does it say about how we as a society view other human beings among us as a society? If we're willing to say, oh, yeah, you know, you give part of your body, you can have some of your time off. It's like we are increasingly in this country becoming stratified into a society of haves and have-nots. In fact, actually, increasingly in this country, we're becoming stratified into a society of have-a-lots, have-nothing-at-alls, and a few who have a little bit. And the have-a-whole-lots would be able to buy organs from the have-nothings-at-all through our prison system. And Blue in Missouri, in our chat room, you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and clicking live chat up at the top of the page. Blue, she says, hey, Tom. They're now collecting DNA from every federal prisoner. And you're right, I had forgotten about that. Set up a great, I mean, you know, you want tissue matching, you want organ donation. Here's the starting point. Republican State Senator John Hawkins in South Carolina. We want to make this work, we really do. But I want to make sure no one goes to jail for good intentions. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that they are concerned that if a sheriff in some little town in southern South Carolina has a brother-in-law who needs a kidney transplant and he happens to know that the guy down the street has the right match, that he's going to go drop a bag of cocaine in that guy's car and then bust him so that he gets in jail so that he can... No, I doubt it. But, I mean, you could build that kind of a world. I think, you know, what this says of us as people is huge. That we, as a society, are increasingly... And this gets back, frankly, to the original... I mean, this was the starting point for the last hour, was debating these pregnancy counseling centers that in many cases masquerade as abortion clinics or something similar to such. And people go in thinking that they're going to get abortion counseling, and very often they get a sonogram, and the person comes out and says, oh, here, let me show you a movie of your baby, rather than want to talk about abortion alternatives. They're talk you out of abortion programs. But, you know, the idea is they're pro-life in their minds. I mean, they think that they're saving lives. Well, you know, I think saving lives is an admirable thing. And, you know, I'm not going to put down people who think that they're saving lives in the context of trying, for example, offering, or who actually are saving, arguably saving lives, in the context of, for example, offering adoption counseling. You know, when I lived in Germany, I worked with for 30 years. I've worked with this international relief agency, Kinder and Jugendhilfswerk Salem, based out of Germany. And all over the world, I've worked as a volunteer, pay my own way. In South America, in Africa, in Australia, in North America, in Europe, and in Asia, and in India. I guess it's, you know, the subcontinent. And the founder of this organization is personally opposed to abortion. He's now 93 years old, I think. And this was 25 years ago. And Germany has very, very liberal abortion laws. But instead of going out and trying to change the laws, what he did was he put up a bunch of posters in various places, in various cities, that basically said, if you're pregnant and you don't want to have an abortion, then we will help provide you, we'll give you a place to live, we'll provide you with the best quality medical care, and we will help get your child adopted out under whatever terms you want. And this was not something to make money. This wasn't some, you know, gee, here's a new business. In fact, the way he set it up, it had to be funded by donations. It was just because he thought that it was the right thing to do. So, you know, I'm not going to put down people for the right thing to do, you know, if they think that they're doing the right thing. Frankly, my sense of it is that an awful lot of the anti-abortion and forced pregnancy movement in the United States that calls itself pro-life has very little to do with being pro-life. It has to do with being anti-woman. It has to do with having men having power over women, particularly the male, the guys in that business. At least that's just been my sense, my experience of it from hanging out with them and talking with them, that many of them, that's what they're all about. It's all about this pseudo-biblical idea that men should have dominion over women and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I'm all in favor of the idea that life is sacred. Let's talk about life being sacred. Why is it that we are making it harder for children to get Medicaid in the States? Under the rubric of trying to stop illegal immigrants. And for that matter, again, I will say, you know, in the context of illegal immigrants, I don't think we have an illegal immigrant problem in this country. We have an illegal employer problem in this country. And if we stop offering employment, you're going to see an awful lot of people leave, and you're going to stop seeing people come. That's pretty straightforward. But in the name of stopping illegal immigrants from getting Medicaid, yeah, like people are just going to come here from Mexico to get Medicaid. Well, you know, maybe some small percentage of them, but so they put into place this draconian program that is causing all kinds of American citizens to 63,000 kids in Florida couldn't get Medicaid. According to the Florida Department of Children and Families, virtually all of them are American citizens. Ohio, 39,000. Their parents couldn't get it together. They didn't have the time. They didn't have the means. They didn't know how to find a birth certificate. They didn't have, you know. In Iowa, 92,880 were disqualified. This is the drop by 5,700. Were qualified, dropped by 5,700. There was 5,700 didn't get it. And then on top of that, you've got, you know, here are adults. That's part of life. Here are adults who worked for Rocky Flats outside Denver. Federal officials, this from Ann Imsey and Laura Frank in the Rocky Mountain News. Great piece of reporting here. Congratulations, Ann and Laura. Federal officials secretly schemed to limit payouts for sick and dying nuclear weapons workers, including thousands from the Rocky Flats plant outside Denver, newly released documents show. The officials responsible for helping these workers went behind their boss's back, called on White House officials for help, and tried to hide their efforts, according to internal emails and memos obtained by a congressional committee and posted on its website. They also wanted to get the White House to override scientific decisions granting compensation and pack the program's advisory board with members less sympathetic to workers. You get it? We have a society where increasingly we're saying, humans, they're disposable, unless they're not born yet. Them are sacred, and it's a big deal. Ann and Laura in this article in the Rocky Mountain News, Ann MC and Laura Frank point out more than 60,000 ill atomic bomb makers, including thousands from Rocky Flats, have sought help. Through the documents, Assistant Deputy Secretary for Labor Shelby Hallmark and other officials expressed grave concern that the bill for providing $150,000 per ill worker could reach $7 billion over 10 years. Holy cow! We're going to pay $150,000 to somebody who's being killed because of the work that they did? Congressman Mark Udall of Colorado says, clearly the administration put dollars above honoring the nation's promise to our Cold War veterans. And then it becomes, it's not even about, you know, when is life important and when isn't it, or, you know, well, who is human and who isn't, or what is, how do you define, it becomes, you know, are we even going to honor the citizens of the United States? Halliburton is fixing to move their headquarters to Dubai. Now, is this because, and the CEO is going to move there. Is this because you can avoid a congressional subpoena if you live in Dubai? Or is this just so you pay fewer taxes in the United States while you're taking all kinds of U.S. tax dollars to build prisons all over the country in case of a civil insurrection or something like that? 16 minutes past the hour.
Truth. In broadcasting, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Tom Hartman, live on Nova M Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
Welcome back. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. It's Air America Radio. Tom Hartman with you. Kevin in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
We have been talking, you have especially, but we've all been talking about how we can try and get our country back on track. And lately I stumbled across an old idea of Benjamin Franklin's, his vision of an ethical society. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm not. I'm, or maybe I am, and I don't know it under those. Tell me about it.
Okay.
Unless it involves reading something, which we don't do on the air. So.
Well, it's just 14 points, and it's temperance, silence, order, resolution, frugality, industry, sincerity, justice, moderation, cleanliness, tranquility, chastity, and humility.
This sounds like stuff out of his autobiography.
Yes. Yep, okay. But it seems like these ideas...
It's been a lot of years since I read that.
These ideas are all throughout our society. It's very similar to the Boy Scout Oath and even the 14 points of AA's pledge. But if we, in connection with trying to retake the Democratic Party, I know you have listeners who are conservatives also, but if we can all commit to just being better people, we go out, we take over the parties, and then make the parties follow us, maybe that's the parade we should be talking about.
Yeah, there you go. Let's have a society that is broadly and universally respectful and holds to high ethical standards. And then in that context, let's talk about the issues. Good point, Kevin. Thank you very much. Chris in Toronto, Canada. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Love your show. It's nice to hear
Thank
somebody
you.
Speaking with dignity and, you know, composure on the radio down in the States. Every time I've been listening lately, they've been yelling at their listeners and such when they come on when they don't agree with them. It's nice to hear a calm voice every once in a while.
Well, thank you, I think. here's the problem, Chris. There are some people in this business who will go, oh, wait a minute, he doesn't yell at people? It must not be sufficiently entertaining. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we're doing okay ratings-wise and all that, but occasionally people call and say, you know, this is really thoughtful, and I want to say, no, don't say that, because people in this, you know, the program director. Anyway, what's up, Chris?
I'm sorry, about the, what was it, South Carolina's Oregon,
sure.
Oregon deal. Larry Niven wrote about 20 books, same universe they call it, regarding the societal impacts of organ legging and such. It's called
Larry Niven, the science fiction writer.
Yeah, he's an excellent one. You might want to read up on, it's a very quick read, the collected works of Gil the Arm Hamilton. Basically, you know, whenever you get a crime, you send someone off to the organ bank. Now, this proposes that there's some safe storage means, but if you don't have safe storage means, a convenient prison population is the best.
That is safe storage.
And essentially you get the situation where every crime is punishable by being chalked up for various other people. And I'm sorry to break this to you, but this is the plot line to a horror novel. This is ghoulish. This is evil in, you know, the way teenagers and kids would define evil. People chalking people up to live a little longer.
I agree. That's my point. If somebody's in prison, they for a certain period of time, they should be there because they should be there for a certain period of time, period. And if they shouldn't be there, then they shouldn't be there. And you don't go and say, hey, you can buy your way out of prison with money, or you can buy your way out of prison with organs, or you can buy your way out of prison by, you know, whatever. I mean,
well, look at the precedents your the administration of your country has been under for the last 6 to 12 years. Do you really think it's such a small step for those people? Not you, not, you know, who you hope to replace them with, but for those people, the lowest common denominator to get into office, to go from voluntary or a little time off to compulsory, or if you want to get out of prison, you can't get out until you donate something, and eventually seeing everybody, you know, oh, I get to live a little longer if I make sure this guy who just jaywalked gets chopped up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you get no crimes except crimes of passion, but, you know.
Well, and that's my point, is that there is a perception in America that there are disposable people. There's a perception in the United States, and I, you know, I'd say that there's large chunks of the world, frankly, where there's a perception that there are disposable people, that there's a class of people who are disposable. And increasingly in our society here in the United States, that class of people is the working poor, the poor, and increasingly, frankly, the middle class. And it's a notion that we should discard. It's not a useful notion. Chris, thank you for the call. Justin in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Justin, a little less than a minute here before we got to take a break. What's up? Justin?
Hello?
Yeah, you're live and on the air, and we're running out of time. What's up?
Oh, great. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I appreciate a lot of what you talk about on your program, and I think you do a really good job of bringing really important issues to the forefront in discussion. But I do want to take note that I think, you know, as a so-called liberal or progressive, I kind of differ from the norm that, you know, I would hope we could move away from abortions a little bit more as a society. I kind of take a holistic approach that, you know, obviously you can't just blame mothers. You can't blame, you know, people for getting...
We need better birth control and better sex education in this country. I mean, it's been demonstrated that when birth control is widely available and sex education is widely available, that abortion rates go down. And I think that all of us will agree that abortion is not a desirable thing. I don't know anybody, and Justin, thank you for your call and for your respectful call. I don't know anybody who is pro-abortion. Even the people right out at the front of the pro-choice movement. You know, everybody wants it to be safe, legal, and rare. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour. Kylie, General Kylie, has resigned. This is the breaking news of the hour. CNN reporting, Lieutenant General Kevin Kiley, the guy who was the number two guy at Walter Reed, who became the number one guy when the number one guy got bounced. And it turned out that the number one guy probably didn't have as much culpability as the number two guy did. He was the one who a congressman's wife had begged him to do something because she personally knew of a wounded soldier who was sleeping in his own urine. He did absolutely nothing. He blamed the conditions on a failure of leadership at the junior level in that building. And he called the Washington Post guilty of yellow journalism. Yeah. So apparently the word is that he was asked to step down. And now he's not just stepping down. He's apparently retiring from the Army, if I'm reading this right. Yeah. Well, today the Army announced that he has announced his, this from Jim Mikuláševsky on NBC. Today the Army announced that he has announced his desire to retire, and it's very likely he would be reduced in retirement at least one rank. Many in the Army speculated as early as last week, speculated that Lieutenant General Kiley would be forced to step down. He's doing it voluntarily, of course, but under considerable pressure, not only from Capitol Hill, but from within the military itself. And it's likely now that he could be forced to retire at that two-star level. Interesting. And meanwhile, George Bush, we're talking about, you know, this whole thing of how do we value humanity? George is going into some of the poorer areas of Latin America. His trips to the various countries down there in Brazil. He goes to a community home that houses poor children, and he says there's a lot of hurting people in the world, a lot of hurting people in Brazil, and the people of the United States care. What he didn't say is how much they care. For example, in the last year's budget for Brazil, we allocated $3.6 million to help children survive, for child survival and health. Now, keep in mind, $3.6 million, that's about, that, you know, that's probably an hour's worth of you know, mandated cost overrun profits for Halliburton in Iraq. I mean, it's chump change. But nonetheless, this year, the Bush administration slashed it by 45%, down to $2 million. Last year, our budget to help Brazil for development assistance was $2.899 million. That's $2,899,000. This year, zero. Cut it 100%. Economic support funds we offer to many countries, zero. So in total, we've cut aid to Brazil by 69%. So Bush goes into one of the poor areas and says, look at all this poverty. Well, we're doing everything we can to help. It's, again, another symptom of this in our culture, this notion that it's appearances that count. It's not the reality, and that the people at the bottom, they're not quite people. That's not so important. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Yes, yeah, good day, Tom. I wanted to switch gears here and talk politics a little bit.
Sure.
About the GOP race. Over the weekend, I guess Fred Thompson was making noises about getting in. Ron Paul, I guess, actually did indicate he wants to join as run as a Republican for president. And
yeah,
Chuck
although
Gable,
Ron Paul will be sort of the Dennis Kucinich candidate. He'll be
sure.
The guy who's speaking truth to power, but nobody's taking him seriously.
Sure. And then, of course, Chuck Hagel made an announcement that he'll make an announcement later, so that's kind of too political, I assume me. But I just wondered...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wondered from your perspective, and I know that you and I are both progressives and we're probably going to vote Democratic, but do you think any of these three gentlemen will lend anything to the race, albeit on the GOP side?
I would love to see Ron Paul in the race debating other Republicans in the primaries, because Ron Paul is a plain-spoken guy and out of sync, shall we say, with the corporatists in the Republican Party. Much like Dennis Kucinich is. Yeah, he pretty much identifies himself as a libertarian. But, you know, I frankly, for example, watching Howard Dean, you know, I lived in Vermont when Howard Dean was governor, and then he went off to become a presidential candidate. And I think that those years and months of campaigning, standing next to Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton and a few of the others, John Edwards, in particular John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich, I think, frankly, educated Howard Dean. I think he learned some things. And what we saw was he became more and more aggressive over time. And my guess is that if Ron Paul's in the Republican primaries, that and Rick, your phone is going nuts here, so I'm going to have to drop your call. But in the Republican primaries, my guess is that if Ron Paul was in there, that you know, who's raising some very hard questions about 9/11, who has some very big questions about the loss of civil liberties in the United States, who is very opposed to many of the Bush administration's programs and policies, including the illegal wiretapping, including the Patriot Act, things like that, that he could really mix things up. And if Chuck Hagel got in as an anti-war candidate, I think that that'd be a good thing for the Republican Party, too. And I think, frankly, it'd be a good thing for America, for the Republican Party to become a little more inclusive. And that said, I don't think the Republican Party's going to allow it. I just don't think they're going to allow it. I think Chuck Hagel was floating a trial balloon to see if anybody out there was willing to fund him as an anti-war candidate, and I don't think anybody will. I just don't think it's going to happen. And well, we'll see with Ron Paul. We'll see. It'll be an interesting one. Stacy in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Stacy. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to tell you, first of all, I have learned so much from listening to you. You are an excellent teacher.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I just wanted to call in response to the first guest you had on this morning. I don't know if you could hear me screaming from inside my house as you were talking to him.
I don't know if you could hear my teeth gritting.
I'm so angry that he would have the nerve to come on and tell you that there was a single clinic that performed 1,500 of those procedures.
That's
a bald-faced lie.
And I called him on it. I said, then you're changing the meaning of the word partial birth abortion, which actually has no meaning anyway because it's not a medical term to begin with. And my guess is that they're including late-term abortions, and they may well be redefining late-term abortions to include more than just third trimester abortions.
Well, this concept...
Because those are so rare in the United States now.
Well, exactly. This concept that women wake up in the third trimester and see, gee, what shall I do today? Shall I have a manicure or shall I go have an abortion? I mean, it's just preposterous. These women are the most desperate and want their babies the most, and there's something terribly wrong. And as you were talking earlier about this kind of science fiction take on just seizing organs and body parts from prisoners, I have this horrible fear that if the laws are changed and things become tighter and tighter, that women who naturally miscarry are going to be prosecuted.
Well,
I mean,
under some of these laws, it's conceivable. Half of all conceptions are not implanted. Okay, so you know, half of the time, only half of the implanted eggs. In other words, when a woman actually tests positive for pregnancy, that represents 50% of all times that a sperm meets an egg and actually forms I guess it's a zygote at that point.
A zygote, right.
Trophoplast or whatever it is. And it never implants in the wall of the uterus, and it's passed out as a menstrual period. So should we be, you know, measuring hormone levels or looking at those fetuses, looking at those cells, those fertilized cells, and having funerals for them?
Well,
I mean, you know,
should
we have funerals for miscarriages in the first trimester? I mean,
made the point so well that the truth is that all the countries in Europe that have access to birth control and access to sex education, they don't need to have abortions because the people understand how to prevent a pregnancy, which also raises the question, does somebody think that all sex is consensual and that birth control doesn't fail? I mean, not everybody who gets pregnant is trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And some women don't have a choice at all.
I absolutely agree with you, Stacey. And there's even a larger issue than that. If you want to step back and even look at the biggest of the big pictures, yes, in Europe, those countries that have the greatest availability of birth control and information about sex education have the lowest abortion rates. But in addition to that, what you find is that there are two giant myths out there about population. There's this reality about population that there were only 1 billion human beings in 1800, that all of human history up until 1800, 165,000 years of human history, created the first 1 billion people in 1800. The second billion people only took 130 years, 1930. The third billion only 30 years, 1960. I remember 1960. I remember John Kennedy being inaugurated. There were half as many people on the planet as there are today. The fourth was only 14 years, 1974. The fifth only 13 years, 1987. The sixth only 11 years, 1999. So you look at that explosion of population, and people say, oh, the solution to this is either A, economic, let's just go into all of the poor countries in the world and do this free trade thing and turn them all into sweatshop workers, and maybe a middle class will emerge and everything will be wonderful. Or B, it's lack of birth control. Well, there are problems of lack of birth control or availability, but really what it comes down to is those countries, those societies where women have relatively equal power with men, you will have zero population growth. And in those societies where women are treated like cattle and are essentially the property of men, you will have 10, 12 children per family, regardless of income. I mean, there are countries in the Middle East where the average family is given the equivalent, U.S. equivalent of $40,000 to $50,000 a year simply for being a citizen from the oil revenue, and they're having 10 and 11 kids because their women have very few rights in those countries. And there are countries where there are countries where there's access to birth control and sex education, and they're having large numbers of families because women don't have power. Ultimately, it comes down to power, frankly, in my opinion. So, Stacy, thanks for the call and for listening. I appreciate it. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program here on Air America Radio. We'll be back. Your calls after this break. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here with you 9.5 minutes before the hour. Victoria Jones on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com, the website. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom.
How's everything going? What's up in Washington today?
Well, of course, the big story is the resignation of Lieutenant General Kevin Kiley.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that.
As the Surgeon General of the Army.
Yeah.
Of course, entirely of his own will.
Yes, of course, of course.
Just woke up this morning and decided he wanted to go.
Yeah. The Bushies obviously wanted to put an end to this slow torture. It's interesting. The Washington Post was the publication that dug deeper on the third-rate burglary that led to Watergate, the third-rate burglary at the Watergate Hotel at the Democratic National Headquarters that ultimately led to the impeachment of Richard Nixon. The Washington Post dug into this story at Walter Reed, although apparently it was not a secret. They didn't need a deep throat. Anybody who simply walked into the building could see it. So I guess in a way, the question we should be asking is not so much, how wonderful are the journalists at the Washington Post, although they did a damn good job, and I want to tip my hat to them, but where was everybody else?
Right.
But then the third question is, there is this story out there, and in the United States, the only corporate media that's written about it is Vanity Fair. There's this story about the forged uranium Niger documents that is apparently what Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney were trying to cover up. They were trying to prevent Joe Wilson and his story from getting any legs and having anybody take it any farther, and certainly trying to tell everybody in the CIA, talk about this and we will destroy you, by outing his wife. That was as much punishment and a warning for CIA officers as it was against Joe Wilson. The famous 18 words or 19 words or however many it was in the presidential State of the Union address, that was a lie. And if that was a lie and the State of the Union address is mandated in the Constitution, it's a constitutional duty of the president in the course of conducting his constitutional duties, is required by the Constitution duties, he is telling lies. That is certainly a high crime and arguably treasonous, but at the very least a high crime and misdemeanor, something impeachable. And that's what Scooter Libby was trying to prevent the investigation from getting to, and he still is. That's what he's still stonewalling. And why are none of the mainstream media going after that? That's the question in my mind.
I think because it's complicated and slightly offbeat, and I think because they haven't followed that aspect of it from the beginning. So that they don't even know that that part of the story is connected to the main part of the story. They know that the story has to do with false intelligence. They know that it has to do with lying in the lead up to the war. But they don't know that it has to do with anything else.
Mm.
They just simply don't know. And I mean, if you haven't even got Keith Olbermann doing the story,
yeah,
then you're on a losing wicket.
I guess I'm gonna have to write an article about this.
You're gonna have to write an article about this.
I won't be the first, but not to say that mine will have any more credibility or purchase than anybody else's. But anyway, what else is going on in Washington D.C.?
Well, that's one of the big ones. No question about that. That's the one that's kind of
Kylie.
Kylie has sort of shaken everybody, I must say. Well, I would say also Senator Schumer calling for the resignation, retirement, or otherwise kind of stepping down of the Attorney General is another one. Because that's one of those stories that you say it on a Sunday talk show, and it usually just goes away by Monday morning. But it hasn't gone away.
Right.
It's one of the lead stories on AOL News, which is always interesting to see what stories they put up there, because that gets an awful lot of coverage.
And that's interesting.
It is interesting that AOL has decided to stick with that as a big story, and they have. Then, of course, Vice President Cheney spoke this morning at the AIPAC convention, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee convention, and blasted anti-war people, anti-war members of Congress. Quote, when members of Congress pursue an anti-war strategy that's been called slow bleeding, they're not supporting the troops, they are undermining them, he said.
Did he have anything to say about the company that he was formerly the chairman of, and the president of, excuse me, and is now a major stockholder in, relocating its residence and its CEO relocating his personal residence to Dubai, Halliburton? And is this guy moving Halliburton to Dubai so that he can avoid subpoenas from Congress?
Well, this might surprise you, Tom, but he had nothing to say about that.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, or is there any kind of buzz in Washington, D.C., that the move of Halliburton to Dubai from being an American company to being a Dubai-based company might have anything to do with the possibility of congressional oversight and congressional investigations, and that by the actual president of the company moving himself and his family to Dubai along with the headquarters of the company, that he might be trying to avoid congressional subpoenas or investigations?
I think people are thinking along those lines. I think people feel that that Halliburton is, if not crooked, then not entirely straight.
And has anybody called to pull this guy's passport?
No, I don't think anyone's gone that far yet. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if we have subpoenas issued.
Yeah, I mean, here we have Pat Leahy saying, this is an insult to the U.S. soldiers and taxpayers. At the same time, they'll be avoiding U.S. taxes. I'm sure they won't stop insisting on taking their profits in cold, hard U.S. cash.
We are going to have hearings in both the House and the Senate on this. I don't know when Henry Waxman finds time to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's a good guy. Well, he's got a staff. I mean, you know, he can.
That's true.
He and his
That's
staff
true.
can walk and chew gum at the same time. Henry Waxman is, in my opinion, one of the best guys out there. As I think what I said to you last week, he's not somebody who you want to have attached to your pantry.
Oh, I don't want him off of me.
Yeah, there you go. The Pentagon has, now this is reported in the LA Times, the Pentagon has begun plotting a fallback strategy for Iraq that includes a gradual withdrawal of forces. It's based in part on the U.S. experience in El Salvador in the 1980s. Much discussion about this on Capitol Hill.
It's too early for there to be discussion. They're still reading the LA Times and taking this in. This is based on the premise that either the surge won't work or that Congress will somehow rein them in. I would say that it will be discussed by tomorrow.
Yeah, and either might be the case.
Either might be the case.
Victoria Jones, thanks for being with us. 57 minutes past the hour.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bogar is with us. He is the military defense counsel for Abdul Zahir, who is a detainee at Guantanamo Bay. Lieutenant Colonel Bogar, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us about Abdul Zahir.
Well, he's about 34 years old or so, from he's Afghan, and he's from Logar province of Afghanistan, which is southeast of Kabul.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and he was picked up by the U.S. forces about June of 2002 and has been held in Guantanamo since, or at least been held by the U.S. government since June of 2002.
Now, he was picked up at a time when we were airdropping leaflets in the region saying that we would pay $5,000 for a member of the Taliban and $10,000 for a member of Al-Qaeda, turn in your neighbors kind of thing?
Right, exactly. In fact, I actually heard numbers up to $25,000 for members of Al-Qaeda. So, now, the history of Afghanistan goes, it's a little different than what's going on in Iraq, where you have the Shias and the Sunnis. In Afghanistan, you have these tribal wars. And my client is a Pashtun.
It's the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Exactly. And my client is a Pashtun, which is about 40% of Afghanistan is Pashtun, and they're the majority tribal group. And within the tribal groups are sub-tribes. And these wars, these tribal wars of sub-tribes, it doesn't matter if you're Pashtun. Pashtun will turn over to Pashtun if you're a different tribe. And for $5,000 or $25,000, these guys will turn over somebody that will avenge a vendetta that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Right.
So the worst you can make somebody out, and it's not just my client, but there's a lot of folks, there's about 100 or so Afghans still in Guantanamo. The worst you can make them out, the more money you get.
So this is bizarre in the extreme. And we were talking earlier about in South Carolina the prisons saying that they're going to take time off prisoners' time if they donate organs and if rich people pay for the cost of the donation and whatnot. This is sort of the exact reverse. I mean, it's the same kind of mentality. You know, attaching a price to humans and without consideration of justice.
Right, right. And what's worse is not just with my client, but with many of the clients, and in fact, this has been reported even in the news, that some of those that have been released, that the evidence that they use from these bounties are considered classified. So right. When an unnamed source, another tribal someone that's from the opposite tribe turns in, an Afghan and says he's Al-Qaeda or Taliban, they'll say he did this, that, and the other thing, and they'll give it to the U.S. government, and based on that information, amongst other things, which I'll get to in a bit, they'll say, okay, well, this person is Taliban or Afghan, and so when they have these things called combat status review tribunals, or CSRTs, that evidence from this unnamed source, is because it's classified, my client or any of the people at the CSRTs can't cross-examine it or even know who made that source. So if, say, it was, and I don't want to use a name, I'll just use Mr. X, if my client Abdul Zahir during the CSRT knew that Mr. X was a rival tribe and he's the one that made these allegations, my client normally would have been able to say, hey, that guy is from an opposite tribe and his family and my family, or his tribe and my tribe, have been fighting for over 100 years, and he'll do or say anything, A, to get $25,000, and to avenge this debt. And right. But that evidence is evidence my client or anybody else has been able to see or even challenge. And that's one of the other problems with these tribunals.
This seems like not just a violation of the Fourth through the Eighth Amendments of the Constitution, but and international law, the Geneva Conventions, but just common human decency, it seems, a violation.
Right, and now you talk about the Constitution, that's an issue, and we, in fact, had my habeas counsel of the Constitution will apply to any of these folks down in Guantanamo.
Right, whether they have habeas rights.
Or any other constitutional, right? Yeah, constitutional
or,
habeas
or rights. Or any other rights to due process.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bogar. He is a military defense counsel for Guantanamo detainee Abdul Zahir. You've been a mobilized reservist from the Philadelphia area where you've been practicing law for the last 15 years. Sir, we have the reports now on what has happened to Jose Padilla, an American citizen
right.
who was subject to 22, 23 hours of isolation a day, stress positions, torture, a series of things that if not frank physical torture, were certainly psychological torture. And apparently, according to the testimony of the psychiatrists who have interviewed him, he's broken. He's a broken man.
Right.
There's nobody home anymore.
Right.
He is so now his personality has been so deconstructed and destroyed that he cannot participate in his own defense. In fact, he thinks his own defense lawyers are part of an ongoing interrogation. He's hallucinated this whole world of everybody's out to get him because that was his reality for 4 years.
Right.
to what extent has your client undergone similar torture and to, or whatever you want to call it, and to what extent is your client now disabled in his ability to defend himself?
Well, I won't get into any specifics about my client, but generally speaking, the practices used that Padilla alleged and that many of the other detainees that had been released have alleged are all consistent. And same with my client, too. Many of the same practices and the techniques that were used, the isolation, the extreme hot, the extreme cold, the sensory deprivation. In fact, this technique is a CIA technique that was used back, I think, in the experiments back in the 50s at McGill. Where they had the sensory deprivations, and within 48 hours, emotional, psychological damage had occurred. And this is the practice they were used, so the detainee became dependent upon the interrogator. And they also used other techniques down there.
Trying to induce the Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, and so that you become dependent. You can't eat, you can't sleep until you do what the interrogator says. And so you have to do, if you give us information, you'll get perks, you'll get sleep, you'll get food, you'll get the Quran, you'll get this.
That doesn't mean that the information is going to have any value.
Well, that's the problem with it. And that's the big concern that some folks don't seem to understand, that is the reliability, that people will say or do anything to stop. Now, it may not be the hot poker in the eye type of torture, but there's other certain levels.
Right.
There's CIA.
But this actually isn't the Stockholm syndrome, then. This is just a slavish, turn a human into a dog type of dependence, because the more sophisticated forms of interrogation, where you actually induce the Stockholm syndrome, you get the detainee to identify with you and your cause, and you know, it's basically deprogramming.
Right.
It's a form of deprogramming, but it's done in a relatively humane fashion. I mean, it's the point is to help have the person see things from your side, and you see them from their side, and communicate as human beings. And that produces some of the very best information, according to the literature I've read.
And that's true. In fact, that's what the problem with some of the techniques that were used down in Gitmo and then later transported to Abu Ghraib was this process, which you got unreliable information. And the FBI, when eventually the FBI saw what was going on, and they questioned the techniques that were used, because they used the humane, the more civil approach, and I say that in the sense compared to what we're dealing with in Gitmo, the civil approach to interrogation, where it's a little more palatable, where they use techniques.
Because you get better information.
Exactly. And their
right.
position has always been that our techniques work. They may be a little slower, but the information is reliable. And that's the bottom line. Do we want reliable information, or do we want just information?
And do we want to lose our essential humanity in the process of getting information?
Well, that's a whole
other humanity.
Right, and that's a whole other story, because in the eyes of the world, we're losing position.
Yeah, yeah. So we're losing out on all these different levels. It is absolutely a tragedy. What can people do if they want to participate in some way?
Well,
talk to elected officials.
Yes, absolutely. Because what we have in Afghanistan, and I speak for my client as an Afghan, and he actually would like to see. One thing I can tell you is he'd like to see other Afghans released before he is. Contact.
Sir, we have to wrap this up. I'm sorry.
Contact your officials and ask that the peace and reconciliation that the Afghans be released to the Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
Right.
Great, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bogar. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Thank you.
16 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America, and all other living things on Earth. 21 minutes past the hour. And time now for a Berlusconi alert! Yes, those of you familiar with the story of Silvio Berlusconi, the small-time businessman and part-time crook. Who then bought a radio station. And then another radio station, and then a TV station, and then another television station, and then another radio station, and then a newspaper, and then another radio station, and then a radio network, and then a television network, and then another radio network, and then another television network, and then another newspaper and a half a dozen magazines, and finally owned all of the radio and television networks in Italy and all of the major newspapers with one exception. The only major media out of his control was the Italian equivalent of NPR, which he did not control, their national broadcasting service. And once he controlled all this media in Italy, what did he do? He ran for prime minister, and what a surprise, he won. Yes, Silvio Berlusconi. Well, it turns out that as prime minister, he was continuing the same sleazy business practices he had used to become the richest man in Italy. And so now, this from Reuters. Silvio Berlusconi and David Mills go on trial on Tuesday over an alleged bribe paid by the British lawyer to keep quiet about the former Italian prime minister's media business dealings. Berlusconi is accused of paying Mills, the estranged husband of British culture, media, and sports secretary Teresa Jowell, $600,000 for withholding details of his media empire during testimony in two court cases in 1997. In other words, he paid him a little over $500,000 to lie in court. Does this sound familiar? I mean, you know, can you spell scooter? Anyway, he's facing up to 8 years in prison. Here's the kicker. When Berlusconi was prime minister, he got passed a law saying that if he was prosecuted for anything and it ran past 2008, the statute of limitations would run out, and he couldn't be prosecuted. So as the article says, if proceedings run into 2008, Berlusconi is likely to avoid prosecution because the statute of limitations, which was shortened under his government, would come into play. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. Yes, what you can do if you own all the media of a nation. Raw story, by the way, reporting that the torture that we were speaking with the lieutenant colonel about, or the...
What was his... Where did that go?
Where did it go? Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bogar, what we were talking with him about in the last segment. The administration, that it was almost certainly ordered by George W. Bush himself... John Turley, law professor at George Washington University, told the Associated Press the administration has been almost pathological in trying to find ways to keep these people from ever seeing a real judge or a real lawyer, and the reasons are obvious. The likelihood, and then Turley, among many legal analysts, this is from David Edwards and Andrew Bylack at Raw Story, Turley, among many legal analysts, believed that the likelihood the tortured tactics were used on the detainees has heightened the administration's state of secrecy for fear of public retribution. The law professor also suggested that President Bush not only knew about the torture program, but may have ordered it. It seems pretty clear that they've been tortured, Turley told the AP, and that the president knew they were being tortured and may have even ordered their torture. May have even ordered their torture. And has it produced intelligence useful? No, it turns out. It produced a lot of stuff. It sent us off on a lot of, according to Tom Ridge, the former Secretary of Homeland Department of Homeland Security, a lot of wild goose chases. This is the actual quote from the Associated Press, Jonathan Turley, the professor of law. He says, it seems likely now that the president may not have not only known about the torture program, but may have ordered it. That would be truly otherworldly, where the United States could be accused of running a torture program. And yet the evidence is relatively overwhelming that that's the case. In the meantime, John Boehner and the House of Representatives twice, back in February 16th and February 7th, was saying, why don't we have a real debate on this Iraq thing? You Democrats want to end the vote? Let's have a real vote on it. So now... the Democrats have said, okay, fine. Nancy Pelosi's put forth a legislative plan to withdraw the troops by August 2008 at the latest and tie it to an authorization of the war. So now John Boehner, is saying the Democrats are using the critical troop funding bill to micromanage the war on terror. Democrats have put forth a haphazardly creative proposal that micromanages the war. So let's see. Before, he was in favor of Congress micromanaging the war and accusing the Democrats of being wusses for being afraid to do so. He says, let's get away from the non-binding resolution. Let's move away from the slow bleed. Let's just have a real debate about what the American people want to have and bring it to an end. But now he's opposed to a real debate because that would undermine our generals on the ground. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least clean elections. You know, we would accept elections where we knew that there was an actual paper ballot that was actually being counted by real human beings, that a corporation wasn't involved in the process, where there was national health care that was reliable and worked well, where our air and water were not poisonous, where one in three of us didn't contract cancer at some point in our lives, where our health care system was not a for-profit business, but served us rather than serving the dollar. Anyhow, let's take a look at what's happened in the last 24 hours in Iraq.
I want to know who the man in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the one to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance.
Air security developments in Iraq as of 15:30 GMT on Monday. This is from Reuters. Near Mosul, gunmen shot dead the director general of water projects in Iraq's Mosul area, Abdullah Mohammed, just outside that northern city. In Ramadi, a suicide bomber rammed his vehicle into an Iraqi police checkpoint, wounding 11 people, including four policemen. In Baghdad, U.S. forces arrested 22 suspected insurgents in raids around Iraq on Monday, targeting al-Qaeda and foreign fighter supporters. In Iskandaria, a mortar rounds landed in a soccer field, killing at least two boys and wounding two others in that town south of Baghdad. In Baghdad, overnight, a total of 20 bodies were found shot dead in different parts of town. In Fallujah, a U.S. Marine was killed in combat on Sunday in the western province of Anbar. In Baghdad, a U.S. soldier was killed and two wounded by a roadside bomb that hit their patrol during a mission supporting an air assault southwest of Baghdad on Sunday. In Mahawil, the body of a man shot dead and tortured was found in that town. And in Musa'ayab, the body of a man shot dead and bound was found on Sunday in that town 60 kilometers south of Baghdad, according to police sources. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat there. There's a blog over at Air America as well. I'm in the chat room all day, every day while we're doing the program. RD in Los Angeles. Hey, RD, you'd rather fight them here over there so you don't have to fight them here? Did you really say that?
Yeah, good morning. Yes.
Good morning.
I served in the military a few years ago, and my philosophy is this. You can go on a website, and Al-Qaeda is now on the Internet saying that they are in Iraq. And the fact that they are in Iraq,
sure,
and the fact that they are fighting our troops in Iraq, yes, I would rather fight them there than have them pouring across our border. You know, I have to give the devil his...
Pouring across our border from where?
From anywhere in the world. That's...
They live in Iraq. Al-Qaeda is a Sunni religious organization.
I understand
it's,
that.
It's like saying the Protestants in Northern Ireland.
I live in a Muslim country. I speak Arabic. I know a lot more about them than you do. Okay.
So you're suggesting, RD, that these guys, that if this insurgent movement, this group of people who want us to leave their country, that if we leave their country, they're going to what, hop on planes and come over here?
That's where you're totally off balance here, because the fact that Al-Qaeda that has come into Iraq to fight our troops, they are foreign-born, and they are going to fight us any country they can, and I would rather fight George Bush. We have not had an attack in this country since 9/11. I met the man. I looked in his eyes. There was a Zogby poll done recently. Over 50,000 Americans and 86% support the president in this war. this country is being lied to by people like you. You fornicating Marxist dope fiend.
Oh, no. It's okay. Thank you, Artie. You know, that was pretty good. You know, we actually, I even thought about getting theme music and putting it on the next time you call in, and we could turn it into a show element. It would be great, you know, but 1-866-303-2270. Philip in Santa Fe. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Tom. Long time wait, but it's worth it. Is there any soul transplants?
Yeah, there's a few folks out there who seem to need them.
Maybe this guy that just called and Bush himself might need a soul transplant.
Well, here's the guy who just called is doing a pastiche. He's imitating the guys on that side, and that's why I said the next time he calls, we're going to do some theme music for it and actually make it work. We should conspire to do a funny show element, you know, because he's pretty good.
Crazy's not a sin.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm calling from the city of Saints, Santa Fe, and, I don't think impeachment is cruel and unusual punishment, do you?
No, I don't.
And I think...
Impeachment, by the way, does not mean removal from office. Impeachment simply means being charged with a crime.
Well, we need to help this guy out of office before he sins so badly that he'll go to hell, but we need to get our country back.
Yeah.
So let's do him a favor and let's get rid of him.
Yeah, that which goes beyond impeachment. That means conviction in the Senate as well. See,
we're not mad at him.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Philip. Jack in San Diego, California. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program.
Yes. Making a false statement during the State of the Union speech may not be an impeachable offense.
Why not?
Well, there is a U.S. code that making false statements to Congress is a felony.
Right.
And that's during testimony. And that's why a lot of the times you will not see high-profile witnesses taking the oath. A lot of times out of a courtesy, they don't give them the oath because it's redundant and they know that they'll get them on the U.S. code. The problem
I believe that that's not the case, but...
Well, yeah, that was the case. I actually called in to complain because Gates was not put under oath during his confirmation hearing, and I talked to the staff of the Senate Armed Services Committee. They cited me the U.S. Code, and they say, as a courtesy to a lot of high-profile witnesses, we don't place them under oath.
Well, that's what the Republicans were saying when they didn't want to place people under oath.
But here's the thing with the...
Let's get back to the president.
The State of the Union speech is not considered giving testimony.
Yeah, may well be. But
U.S. Code wouldn't apply.
May well be. In paragraph 8 of section 1 of article 2 of the Constitution, right, this is the first part of the part of the Constitution that deals with the executive branch. The very last thing that it says in section 1, this is paragraph 8, before he enter on the execution of his office, this is the president, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. Now, my understanding is that oath means that you are taking an oath. In other words, you are under oath. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Period. Close quote. End of sentence. End of paragraph. End of section. Now, if lying in the State of the Union address, which is the only speech which is mandated for the president to actually give to the American people, it is his annual report. It says, in fact, the previous paragraph, the previous paragraph is on his payment. I'd have to track it down. But in any case, the Constitution specifies that the president shall, periodically give a report on the State of the Union. And in fact, I'm looking for it here. Yeah, he shall from time to time give to the Congress information on the State of the Union and recommend for their consideration such measures as he may judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary conditions, convene both houses or either of them. In the case of disagreement with the respective time of adjournment, blah, blah, blah. But basically, this is a constitutionally mandated statement that he's making. So it is the only statement that the president makes that's within the context of a mandate that's in the Constitution. And the only thing he swears to when he swears in as President of the United States under the Constitution, under the oath prescribed in the Constitution. The only thing he swears to, it's not to protect us, it's not to be the decider, it's not to protect the troops, it's not any of that stuff. It's to protect the Constitution of the United States. Well, now, how could you construe lying to the American people about a war, specifically for the purposes of gaining political power, as not being an affront, at the very least, to the Constitution of the United States?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, and maybe this is a technicality, is that the false statement during the State of the Union on itself is not a crime or impeachable, but if you take the country to war based on the false statement, I believe that would be impeachable. You see the distinction there?
I do see this distinction, and I'm inclined to agree with you. And apparently he's done both. So what are we going to do? I mean, here he's done both. So,
you know, if you get a chance, compare the impeachment of Bill Clinton, the time factors, to the situation that George Bush finds himself in, and I believe you will find that impeachment is very doable.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And even more interesting, go back and read the actual articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon, which we did on this program maybe 6 or 8 months ago. I just read them on the air. It takes, you know, maybe 15 minutes or not even that, one segment of the show. And it's scary because it's like you're reading this thing and you're thinking, in fact, when I read it, you know, I think most of my listeners thought, I didn't tell them in advance, these were the articles of impeachment proffered against Nixon by Conyers and his committee. And, Jack, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, though. But you listen to it, and you think, oh, this is what the Democrats are going to propose to use to impeach Nixon or Bush. And, no, it was Nixon. Same crimes. Same bunch. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
One life when it's one need in the night. One love we get to share it. Please, you baby, don't care for
it. And welcome back to the place where our talking points come from. From Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Tom Hartman here with you 9.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-303-2270, our number. Sandy in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Sandy.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Tom. I was thinking about an article I read online from, it was in both the L.A. Times and the New York Times last week, about brilliant new idea by the governor of Colorado to solve his lack of agricultural workers now that so many of their migrant workers have been scared off by the big sweeps. And so what they want to do is take prisoners and pay them 60 cents a day and have them work in the fields, and then from their wages, I believe, the farmers have to pay for the extra guard duty needed to keep an eye on them while they're out.
Yeah.
And I don't know, this thing.
It's all about cheap labor, Sandy.
And also just the devaluation of human beings.
Yeah.
And
I don't disagree with that. I do think that there is something to be said for people in prison who are going to get out having an opportunity to learn a trade engage in it.
And to
be busy during the day and have their hands and their minds engaged. I think that's a fine thing. And I think, frankly, it should go beyond making license plates. I mean, you know, it should be, you know, something legitimate. On the other hand, then you have also, you know, the logic of that has been extended by some particularly private prisons where they've got prisoners manufacturing goods for private corporations in competition with former, you know, manufacturing companies. And then it gets real problematic. But yeah, your point is well taken.
In connection with your point that you've made numerous times about the privatization of prisons, it just seems like what incentive do they have for ever getting people out of prison? Because they're developing essentially a slave force there, and that makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, and it's nothing new. I mean, we've done that in many, many times over the years, I mean, over the thousands of years of what we call civilization, and every time it's ultimately, we look back on it with horror, and we're doing it again. Sandy, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Mark in Van Nuys, California, listening on KLSD. Hey, Mark.
Hey, yesterday I was reading the L.A. Times, and there was an article in there concerning the what I call, what I prefer to call the freedom of choice debate.
Mm-hmm. With regard to abortion?
Pardon me?
With regard to abortion?
That name came up, that word came up. The presidential candidates were being accused of flip-flopping because at one point they said that they were against abortion, and at another point they said that they were pro-choice. And I just have to think that it's nothing but conflating those two separate ideas, those two separate issues, and it's making me think that, like you said, a lot of people agree that abortion is wrong. I do. But just like murder is wrong, I don't believe everybody needs to be locked up in some minority report world just because they might commit murder or just because they might want to get an abortion and be chained.
Well, I think actually, Mark, you know, let's just break that down a little bit, because in our society, what we've done largely since Roe v. Wade is we have said that abortion past the time when a fetus is viable, when it could live outside the mother, that at that point, then it's wrong. There has to be some overriding medical reason for that abortion, and you know, not convenience, for example. But, you know, if we're talking about a piece of tissue that's the size of a grain of wheat, I don't think it's wrong, frankly. I just think it's tragic. I think it's unfortunate. I think, you know, it is a difficult decision to make, and it is a surgical procedure. Who wants to, you know, raise their hand and say, oh, boy, I want to go have surgery? Nobody. I mean,
however,
to suggest that people just, you know, gleefully have abortions is crazy.
However, the most basic idea of murder, of which that there can be, you know, all sorts of discussions about at what point fetuses are human beings. But even in the case of murder, I do not believe that people should be falsely imprisoned and enslaved just because they may at one point commit murder. And
I'm missing your point.
Taken away.
Yeah, I'm missing your point about, you know, that somebody may do it. I don't get it.
Hmm.
Okay. All righty. And apparently you don't either. Thanks a lot for the call, Mark. I appreciate it. Let's see. Dave in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Dave, we got about a minute here before we got to wrap this show up.
Oh, hi, Tom. It just occurred to me over the weekend that if anyone ever feels they have to defend being a liberal or a progressive, all they really have to do is look at Mount Rushmore. I mean, from Washington and Jefferson founding in the liberal tradition right through Lincoln and the progressive views of Teddy Roosevelt, there's nothing more American or patriotic than what those
four liberal presidents.
Yep.
Four liberal presidents. You don't see John Adams and well said.
They didn't put John Adams up there.
No, they didn't. Dave, nice note to end the show on. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. Yes, coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, conservative Dennis Avery says that Senator Barbara Boxer has absurd answers to global warming. As you may have guessed, I'll be disagreeing. Naomi Klein is going to be here. I think she's one of the best writers in the Americas. She's Canadian. On the psychological torture of Jose Padilla, that and your calls here on the Tom Hartman program, the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America and the world. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.